of sermon today, let's go over to John 9. John 9, I want to talk about something that's interesting today. Have you ever thought what it would be like to be blind? You know, the individual that played Ray Charles in the movie, he would get up in the morning, have breakfast, and then put a blindfold on. He'd wear it all day long because he wanted to experience what it was really like. And I've never been blind, but I was almost completely blind. There was a time when I could barely see. I had developed cataracts. There's a lot of reasons why you can develop this. But anyway, what it is, it's a clouding of the lens of the eye. And you can't imagine when you have this lens that is clouded, when light shines into it, it refracts in every direction, and you're completely blinded. I was so dangerous out there driving at night, I had to discontinue it altogether. But anyway, it got worse and worse and worse, and I was harder and harder to work making sermons or doing any writing or anything like that. I could hardly see the computer. And so as much as I hated to do it, I had surgery, cataract surgery. It's kind of fascinating. They take this very tiny lens, they fold it over, and it has springs on it. If you took and looked inside my eye, you'd see this lens with springs holding it in place. I make this tiny incision, pop it in. I'm in the surgery room. I'm laying on the table. Everything is gray and clouded. They pop this lens in, and whammo, I can see. It was awesome. Every desk, every chair had knife-sharp edges. I could hardly believe it. And you know what? Everything looked almost like, and I know I was in a hospital, but everywhere I went it looked like a hospital because all the lines were sharp and everything was so clean and everything was white and sharply colored. And you know what? The colors were astounding. I actually would linger at the flowers and just look. And you know what I thought? How did I miss this all of these years before this happened? Why wasn't I grateful when I could see these colors? I took them for granted. But they're so beautiful, and it's so incredible to be able to see. It was a time when I could barely see, and then all of a sudden, radically, I could see. And you know that we understand there's physical that mirrors the spiritual. And there's a spiritual parallel to this. You and I, we may be able to see physically, but how clouded is our spiritual lens? How much do we see spiritually? Today I want to explore this subject in the book of John, because there John, the apostle, records a story of a man who was born blind from his birth. And this story is filled with ironic twists. And each one of those twists is a twist of the knife in the belly of human nature. Each one of those twists present great lessons for you and me. In this story, the man born blind from his youth or from his birth, he comes to see things spiritually with increasing clarity as the story plays out. And the spiritual leaders that confront him, they claim to be able to see. But as the story progresses, the religious leaders sink deeper and deeper into darkness. Let's go there, John 9, verse 1. First Christ comes upon a blind man. And it says, and as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And so Jesus comes upon a man, and the word he uses here is interesting. It's anthropos in the Greek, and it doesn't mean a specific man. It doesn't mean you. It just means a man. And I think this is significant in that it simply means a human being. And so there's an implication here by the use of this word that he's talking about humanity in general. That is, this man is any man. This man is every man, and it reminds us of this incredible truth. Every one of us was born spiritually blind. And so this man, I believe, is representative here. The disciples then ask him a question in verse 2. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, Who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So the Jews, in that they understood that evil, suffering, and tragedies and such were the consequence of sin. And so if someone was suffering, they believed that therefore that individual had to have sinned. And if he could not have sinned, they felt that it had to be inherited, because God had said in the scriptures that he visits the iniquity on people unto the fourth generation. And so they were kind of looking at it this way. So if this man was born blind, it wasn't his fault. And they wondered, was it his parents' fault then? And I believe that his parent, or these disciples, made the same mistake that the sermon in which Terry Ransomin walked out on made. And that is the message that our problems are only caused by us. That message isn't always true. They had forgotten the message of the book of Job. That great patriarch hadn't sinned to incur the sufferings that he did. His pain actually came from another source. It was a greater plan. God was going to work with that great patriarch, and he was going to bring about pressures that would bring him to a point of conversion so that he would one day see, I've heard of you, but now my eye sees you. I get it. I'm not blind anymore. I see. And so it is that in like manner, this man who was blind was going to be worked with by the great God. And Jesus then said this. Jesus answered and said, neither has this man sinned, nor his parents, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. And so here is the first irony that is presented to us. The man is born blind so he could come to see. And he was born blind so that we could come to see the works of God. And so Jesus begins then to set the stage here, to dramatize, as it were, this a story of comparing and contrasting light and darkness, seen and not seen. In verse 4, he says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night comes when no man can work. Why? Because they can't see. Verse 5, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And so what next occurs is about good and evil, about spiritual blindness and true vision. In verse 6, and when he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. That is, he spread the clay upon the eyes of the blind man. And he said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. And he went his way, therefore, and washed, and then he came seen. Now, what was interesting to me was that the blind man's only part here was to do in simple faith what Christ told him to do. The man couldn't see after he was anointed, could he? No. But when he went and did what he was commanded, then suddenly he could see. And to me, this is a great key, isn't it, in spiritual vision. When we obey God, then we can see. So Mr. Armstrong, he kept the feasts of God for 7 years, not knowing what they meant. And then after keeping them, because God had said to keep them, he did what? He came to understand what they meant. In verse 8 through 12, now the neighbors get involved and discuss the fact of this miracle. Now neighbors always do this, don't they? They always want to get involved and discuss what we're doing. Anyway, John 9, verse 8. John 9, verse 8. And the neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? And some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. But he said, I am he. Therefore said they unto him, how were your eyes opened? And he answered and said, a man that is called Jesus made clay, and anointed my eyes, and said, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Then said they unto him, where is he? And he said, I know not. Notice that the neighbors had seen him, And they knew that he was blind, but they didn't know who he was. I want you to think about this. These neighbors had probably lived next to him for years, but they couldn't recognize him. How could this be? Really simple, isn't it? Why? Because we blind ourselves to those people who have needs. You know we do, don't we? It's like they don't exist because they might ask something of us. So we keep our distance. We blind ourselves to them, and that's what they did. And so after years, they go, well, I'm not sure. Maybe it's him, maybe it's not. Well, if he was blind, how many times did they go to help him? How many times did they spend some time talking with him? How many times did they want to serve him, you see? My question, of course, today is we're going to apply this to us, aren't we? And so I ask you today to think about this. How are we like those neighbors? Those neighbors asked a simple question, how did you come to see? And he answered the question in a straight, simple, straightforward way. Now, what's interesting is the neighbors asked the question, don't believe the answer. And so what are they going to do? They're going to take him to the religious leaders, and they're going to ask it again. In fact, this question is going to be asked four separate times in the story. And isn't this ironic? People ask for the truth, they receive the truth, and then they reject the truth. It's so typical, isn't it? Because we're spiritually blind, you see. So next, the man is going to be questioned by the religious leaders, the Pharisees this time. John 9, verse 13. Through 17, and they brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. And then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. And he said unto them, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and do see. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keeps not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was division among them. And so Jesus had made clay, or put clay on this man's eyes, on the Sabbath day. And isn't this what the Sabbath day is for? To heal. Isn't that what the Sabbath day is about? Freedom from bondage, isn't it? And so here you have a blind man who can see. And these people didn't believe that it happened. And it's ironic here that the spiritual leaders who claimed to see couldn't see. He knows where Christ is from. He healed me. This had never been done before. Have you ever heard of it? No. And so he can do this. He must be from God. He knows who he is. And yet the religious leaders don't know. And so I think it's ironic again that the reason they think he's not from God is because he does good on the Sabbath day, the day you're supposed to do good on. So they think he's bad for doing good. So they could not condemn Christ in this case. They couldn't get away with it, or they didn't push this argument of him doing wrong on the Sabbath day and breaking the Sabbath. So what they did next was they tried to deny that the miracle even happened. And so they call for the parents. We're going to check this out further because we don't think it even happened. John 9:18. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked him, saying, is this your son who you said was born blind? And how then now does he see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. By what means he now sees, we know not, or who has opened his eyes, we know not. He's of age, ask him, and he'll speak for himself. These words spoke the parents because they feared the Jews. For the Jews already had agreed that if any man did confess that he was the Christ, that he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, said his parents, he's of age, ask him. And so now we see something interesting. The man born blind from the very beginning, this man now has to stand alone between him and God. He's one fledgling believer, and the parents are afraid to take his side because they fear the religious leaders. So here he is pitted against the hardened hearts and the opposition of disbelief. And so the religious leaders try to discredit the miracle, and they ask their parents, how can this be? The implication is, isn't it? Somebody's lying about this, about his past. Now, the parents aren't particularly courageous in this. They don't deny the truth, but they put the question back on the religious leaders because they were afraid. And so the Pharisees have to ask the son again. They ask him again, and then they don't want to see the answer. And what's so interesting is this. They're forcing themselves to keep facing the truth. And then they have to reject it over and over and over again. Now, here's an incredible irony. They would put someone out of the synagogue. It's not like today. Today, if you're in a church and they put you out because of your beliefs, you go to another church. In that day, there was only one monolithic community of faith. If you were put out there, you couldn't do business with others. You were put down. You became a pariah in the community. It was a whole different level. And so this was something really to be feared. But here's the point I make. Isn't this ironic? You confess the truth and you're put out of the synagogue that professes to teach the truth. Real belief in God can result in expulsion from the religious community that claims to worship God. To me, there's a great truth in this story, and there's an important reason why it is placed here in the Bible. I think that all the people of God will have to face this sometime in our calling. We will face losing the acceptance of others in order to accept Jesus Christ. To me, we'll give you an example of hundreds today. I'm grateful for it, but hundreds today believe that they should not buy and sell on the Sabbath. And yet out in the congregations, I hear reports all the time of brethren that are trying to push people, trying to force them into it. And ministers, religious leaders, that are putting other people out. They're casting them out of the congregation because they see this truth. It's an amazing irony, isn't it? But it's here, you see. There's a story here, and there's lessons here for us. You and I are going to stand alone. And he said one day they'll take you into their synagogues. They'll question you. They'll interrogate you. And that's what they were doing here. And this is a lesson for us. All that happened to Israel was for those who would live at the end of the ages. And so today, some of the people of God are being attacked. You read Isaiah 66, and it talks about him coming to certain groups, joy and another shame. And the one that he comes to their joy were the ones that their brethren cast them out. And so it is. The man next, who was born blind, becomes a little more bold. They call him a second time. Verse 24. Then again called they the man that was blind, and they said unto him, give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. And he answered and said, whether he be a sinner or not, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Then said they unto him again, what did he do to you, and how opened he your eyes? And he answered them, I've told you already, and you didn't hear. Wherefore would you hear it again? Will you also be his disciples? See that? Here are the people who say, they deny the works of God, and they say, praise God. The same breath they say, we know this man, God, is a sinner. Look at the blindness. And they invoke the name of God to deny the works of God. They command the man to speak the truth. Then they close themselves off to receiving that truth. They shout what they claim to know. And in so doing, they prove their utter ignorance. Man, This happens more times than I think we can ever imagine. So they ask him a fourth time what they refused to hear. And he says, I told you and you didn't hear. And then with a wink of feigned innocence, he twists the knife. Why do you want to hear it again? You guys want to be his disciples? So he knows better, but he pretends they're in earnest here. And in so doing, he reveals their insincerity. Well, there's nothing left for these leaders to do, is there? They have one last thing. We can revile him. That's what we're going to do. We're going to mock and put him down. John 9, verse 28. John 9, verse 28. And then they reviled him, and they said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. We know that God spoke unto Moses. For as this fellow, we know not from whence he is. And the man answered and said unto them, why herein is a marvelous thing, that you know not from whence he is, and yet he's opened my eyes. Now we know that God doesn't hear sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and does his will, him he hears. Since the world began, it's not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind. If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. And they answered and said unto him, you were altogether born in sins, and do you teach us? And then they cast him out. Well, I've got to rely on that last resort. Now the healed man's mockery of these leaders actually takes wings. And he says to the religious leaders of all people, almost the same words that Christ said to Nicodemus, remember this? Really a twist of the knife. You're a teacher in Israel and you don't know these things? The man born blind becomes the teacher now, doesn't he? As he gives them this little sermon. We know this, that if a man's a sinner, God doesn't hear him. And yet this man did this tremendous miracle. He must be of God. The conclusion is inescapable. Jesus is not the sinner. He is of God and cannot on any grounds be rejected. And this is the truth, that there's no other conclusion that can be reached. But there is a response in which the people had choices to make. They could embrace the facts or they could shut their eyes to the truth, couldn't they? So what did these leaders of religion do? They leapt into darkness with both feet, didn't they? With both eyes shut. And they say, you were born in sin and you would teach us? Us as readers, we say, well, yes, yes. But you understand the point is that they again were putting him down. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, about how we get to blind ourselves sometimes by our own self-image. And so he taught them with insight and savvy, if you can hear it. But they, the religious leaders, the teachers, refused to be taught. They asked his opinion. They got the answer in full. And now there was nothing else they could do. They couldn't accept the truth. They closed their eyes to the possibility. And they resorted to defense mechanisms and cast him out. Now, what's interesting is this. No sooner is he cast out than Jesus is at his side. This is an interesting point. John 9 and verse 35, John 9 and verse 35 says this. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he found him, he said unto him, do you believe on the Son of God? And he answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, you've both seen him, and it is he that talks with you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Go to John 6 for a moment, if you would. Christ asks him if he believes on the Son of God, and the blind man says, who is he? And he says, you have seen him. Don't you think there's a double meaning here? Yes, he saw him physically, but now he worshiped him. So now he saw spiritually too, didn't he? Yes, the leaders cast him out of the synagogue for the truth. And when they did, Christ then was there with him. They cast him, if you will hear it, into the very presence of Jesus. And that's because of this. Sometimes Jesus is found outside the synagogue. He himself was cast out, wasn't he? Do you remember that sermon he gave in Luke where he went to the synagogue? He gave a sermon. He said, "This day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears." And those people could not see it, could they? They shut their eyes. They grabbed him. They thrust him out. They took him to a hill. They were going to throw him off the cliff and try to kill him. Now, Jesus was cast out. So he understands, doesn't he? It says he was tempted in every way that we are. And we have been through a number of casts out, it seems. But my point is this today, that he understands our situation. And the religious leaders will cast out those who will hold to the truth in many cases. I'm not saying every case at all, am I? No. But I am saying as a general rule, we see this pattern over and over and over again. That their position, their authority, their power, and all of those things count more in some cases than the truth of God. And this is a tragedy. But we choose, don't we? You and I choose. Will we take the correction of God when the truth hurts? Or will we shut our eyes to have our own way? It's a vital, vital, vital point to spiritual vision and salvation. And so he was cast out, but he says this, "They will cast you out of the synagogues." But here's what he says in John 6 and verse 37. "All that the Father has given me shall come to me, and him that comes to me I will in no wise cast out." That's a beautiful, comforting thought, isn't it? Yes, they may cast you out. They may do something to hurt us. He will never leave us, never forsake us, never cast us out. No matter what the humiliating experiences we may go through in life, no matter how others may reject us, he will not. And you, I remind that he has everything. He is everything. Every hope, every dream, every vision that we have is with him. And so we will end up, I believe this deeply, each one standing alone. There won't be this mentality of what church you're in being a ticket to a place of safety or a somehow reward, great reward in the kingdom. It's each one of us alone, isn't it? Each one standing like this man did. Us and our God, no matter the circumstances. But he says he'll never leave us, never forsake us. Let's go back to John 9. John 9. Christ sums this up now, the message of this entire chapter. He is the light of the world, and men loved darkness rather than light. Verse 39. "And Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? And Jesus said unto them, if you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, we see. Therefore, your sin remains." And so Jesus said he came into this world for this judgment. That is, we have his example as a standard to judge by. And so he came so that those who claim to see might not see. And those who don't see might see. All of us, born blind. And yet he opened our eyes, didn't he, to see the truth. We see what other people don't see. I remind you today, it's a matter of degree. The sneering Pharisees say, are we also blind? We expect Jesus to say yes, but he doesn't. I think we're a little surprised, and I think the Pharisees were a little surprised that he was going, you say you see, and so it is then, and so your sin is imputed to you. And so my point today is this. These Pharisees suffered from the illusion of sight. They thought they had understanding, and because of that, they thought they were spiritually superior. And if we think that, we automatically blind ourselves to finding the truth, don't we? If we think we know it, if we think we're the ones, we automatically make ourselves out of the running. We can't be. So the illusion leads them into deeper and deeper darkness. But the illusion can lead us into the same kind of darkness. Revelation 3, if you will. Revelation 3. In the mind of Jesus, there are only two kinds of people. The kinds that are born blind, all of us are. But some will come to see through him. Now, there'll be others who think they can see, and yet they choose to be blind. And we're either one of these two groups. We either have one of the attitudes, or we have the other one. Which one are we like? Which one are we going to be like? And so in Revelation 3 and verse 14, another familiar scripture for us, to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write these things, says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold nor hot. Then because you're lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. Why? What's the issue? What's the problem here? Because you say I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, but don't you know that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked? They can't see themselves for what they are. They can't see it because they think they're superior. So we live in an age where people are, yes, zealous for what we're doing, zealous for what our church is doing, but how zealous are we for what God is doing, especially if he's showing us, you got a little problem here, Art, that you need to work on. How zealous then are we, you see, for the things of God? That's the era we're in. That's the attitude we're having to deal with. And it's spiritual blindness that is the enemy. And we fit that pattern. We are either those who are becoming sighted by the correction of Jesus Christ and by his truth, or we will close our eyes and we will shut them. We'll make a choice. And I've seen this happen in many cases where people will make a choice. Could it be this be us today? Proverbs 21, I ask you to turn there. Is it possible that we think we see spiritually? Could we be like the Pharisees and say, surely we are not blind? My friends, brethren, we all are a little bit blind. We all have. Maybe we see, but do we have certain blind spots that we don't see? You ever been driving down the street and go to change lanes and all of a sudden you hear this loud honk? And you go, what? I never saw them. And there was someone else in that very lane. Why? Because there are blind spots in your car. Each car has its own blind spot, doesn't it? I say each person has their own blind spot as well. That we have spots in our lives that are blind spots, and it comes because of human nature. Because the vehicle we're in has human nature, and as Jeremiah writes, the heart is deceitful and wicked. Who can know it? You see, it keeps us blind. It wants to make us feel good about ourselves. It wants to protect us. It's the defense mechanism in us. And so it makes us think we're good when we're not. It enables us to justify. It enables us to defend ourselves against seeing who and what we really are. So Proverbs says this in chapter 21 and in verse 2, every way of man is right in his own eyes, but God ponders the hearts. Man, is this true? Sometimes we think we see so much. And yet we are very capable, every one of us are, of missing the obvious. There's a story that illustrates the point. Sherlock Holmes and Watson, they're out camping one time, And it's late at night, and they had a nice dinner, and they both had a glass of wine, and they went to bed in their tent comfortable. And they lay down and drifted to sleep. And a few hours later, Sherlock Holmes awoke, and he nudged his friend Watson, and he said, "Watson, look up. Tell me what you see." And he replied, "I see millions and millions of stars." And he says, "What does that tell you?" Sherlock said to Watson. "What does that tell you?" And he pondered. For a moment, he says, "Well, astronomically, it tells me that there are millions and millions of galaxies out there." He said that astrologically, it tells me that Leo is in Saturn. And he said, "Orologically, it means that it's a 3:15 in the morning. Meteorologically, we're going to have a beautiful day tomorrow. Theologically, it tells me that we're very small and insignificant, and God is very great and powerful." "Why?" he said. "Well, why are you asking me?" And he says, "Well, I think you're blind. If you can see all those millions of stars, someone stole our tent." All right. The point is, sometimes we don't see what's right in front of our faces. And so we don't see what's going on in our spiritual condition, and we don't see our true relationship with God. We often see what it is we want to see, isn't it? Remember when Jesus was raised and those that were closest to him, they didn't recognize him. Why? Why? They knew it was the Lord after they recognized him. They weren't expecting to see him. He was dead. He was buried. And so sometimes our expectations cloud our vision. Sometimes our prejudices cloud our vision. Sometimes our beliefs cloud our vision. And you see us today, it's so funny, we live in America, we live in this richest nation ever, and yet people complain all the time, don't they? Our cable bill is too high, our roaming charges are too much, you know, we're sometimes irritated because of things that a loving, faithful spouse will do, and we're irritated by these little things sometimes we don't remember. We have food on our table. We have the beautiful vision and can see the colors of the flowers. We take so much of it for granted. We have water to drink. We have people and friends who love us and a support group in the Church of God, air to breathe, strength to live on. All those big things, and we get so irritated over the little things. We have blind spots, presumptions, ideas, philosophies, all of these things. We have a false confidence in ourselves. Sometimes we have a false insecurity about ourselves. We have all kinds of things that color our vision. And so we have blind spots. We have blind spots because of fear. I want you to think about this for a moment in terms of what we just read, that these parents were afraid to say the truth, weren't they? Because they could be cast out. And so they let that blind them, didn't they? They closed their eyes to defending their very own son because they were afraid of being cast out. So we have people who are feared today to speak the truth, and they're afraid they may not be accepted by the church. There is a tendency in the church to whatever the church believes, that's what I believe. And the tendency is there because we need the acceptance. We want to be a part. We want to be accepted, and we know we won't be if we're in some kind of opposition or conflict. And so the churches are afraid, too, if somebody has a different idea, that it may just cause everyone to leave them or something like that. So what about the Pharisees? Do you see the fear angle there? Can you see that they were afraid of Christ because they thought he might eclipse them? People might start following him rather than them. They could lose their power. They could lose their position. What a horrible thought. But they put that first instead of God's truth, and they therefore blinded themselves. Have you ever seen this happen at work? Or have you ever seen it at the church? Someone who is seeking or desires or hopes for a promotion becomes threatened when somebody else is doing successfully. You ever seen that? Sometimes others have to try and torpedo them. I've seen that happen in the Church of God. This kind of thing happening, this kind of fear. How about blinded because we're judging others? You see, these Pharisees said, "You born in sin want to teach us?" They had judged this man as inferior, hadn't they? Do we ever do that? Do we ever think that this person can't possibly know better than me? I can't learn from them because I'm superior, I have a better job, better clothes, better car, I'm in a better position? Yes, I think this happens to us many times. I remember a time in Spokesman's Club to this day when there was a fellow who had some sort of mental problem, but I would help him from time to time give speeches. But one day, his name was Art too, and it was one day we met, and it was just before club, and I remember standing at the door, and for some reason he turned and said something to me, which I won't repeat because it's a giveaway, but it was like God speaking through him. He nailed me for something that wasn't a blind spot I had in my life, and I just went, shocked me. But yet, could it have been God speaking through that man? But you see, who would think that man would teach someone else? Oh, yes. Yes, we can learn from everybody. Do you remember what Solomon said when we read through Proverbs in the reading? The truth cries out in the streets. It's everywhere, isn't it? If we'll but listen, if we'll have our eyes open, if we'll let it correct us, we'll learn from it, and we will see. It's a beautiful truth, a wonderful truth. Anger issues, too, blind us. These Pharisees could never hear or see what Christ was or what he was doing. They were so enraged at this man before they threw him out. They were so furious with him threatening them that there's no way. Have you ever seen a man or a woman enraged? Have you ever tried to reason with them? No. And so some of us harbor anger, bitterness, resentments. And these things cloud our vision spiritually. And so it's something to explore. So anyway, what about this view of the religious traditions of the Pharisees? You see, you can't break those. Because if you begin to question those things, then their whole world could crumble. Their authority, their power, all of that, their position, could all crumble. And so they have to feel threatened by this, and they have to protect it. And we have our own traditions in the Church of God. I've seen this over and over again. And so we'll put those things before the truth of God. Psalm 19. We let these things override us. We blind ourselves. When we do that, we'll hurt ourselves and we'll hurt others. So I say this today, just like we can turn and look at that blind spot and see the car in the lane next to us, we can look and see our own blind spots. We can do this. And when we do, we'll be more cautious in our judgments. We'll be more cautious in our actions towards others. We won't be amazed if God does something without our permission, will we? We'll listen even if we're being criticized. Wait a minute. What if there's some truth in what this person's saying? I better listen just in case God's speaking through them. Would we ever be threatened by others? No. Like John the Baptist, he must increase and I must decrease. It's not about me, is it? It's about the truth. It's about what God is doing. And there will become a kind of peace about us, an acceptance of life's realities. And we'll love God's truth, and we'll see it as always liberating, as Psalm 119 says in 165. Verse 165, great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. And so how can we come to see our blindness? I'm going to go very quickly over a couple of brief points, just a few, not all that could be included, but some. Can you see point number one is vital? Admit that we're blind. It's not a shame. We're all born blind, aren't we? And so it's not a shame to admit this. It is the normal state of all men and women. Admit that we have blind spots. And once we do this, we're way ahead of the game. If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. But if we confess our sin, then he will forgive us and cleanse us. But if we insist that we're righteous, if we insist we're the right ones, if we insist that we're better than others, we blind ourselves to ever seeing the truth about ourselves. We become arrogant. And this is so vital, isn't it? Humility to see the truth. We have to have that humility. And second point is this. I think that we should pray that God show us our blind spots. And he said that whatsoever we ask, we will receive if we keep his commandments. And he said, ask that you may receive. And would a father give a stone when his son asked bread? And he said, come and ask, and he will give it to us. And so he'll show us that. He wants to show us. The issue is, how willing are we to see it when he shows it to us? And then I remind us of this. Point three, practice obedience. Because that was the key to me, that this man only did what Christ said, and he was healed, and he could see, and the lesson is there for us. Mr. Armstrong's an example with the Holy Days. And it says, if you want, it says, continue in my word, and you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That is, you'll be able to see. You won't be blinded, okay? And a good understanding have all they that do his commandments. And so the point is when we begin to obey and we find something we're wrong in, let's change. And when we do that, the more we do it, the more our spiritual vision opens up. And now I go to 1 Corinthians 11, and we'll end over here. 1 Corinthians 11, because of where we are now, I want to emphasize this. Actively look for our blind spots. Every year at the Passover time, we are told to examine ourselves, to take a hard, cold look inside. And so it says in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 28, let a man examine, or let a woman examine herself, and so let them eat of that bread and drink of that cup. And so every year, we look at ourselves and we go through a kind of inventory. And I say this, this year, as we move into the Passover season and we begin to examine ourselves, why not examine ourselves in this light? Why not have a look and see, what are some of my blind spots? My pride in the way? My past beliefs in the way? Are anger issues playing here? Are there fear issues? What is motivating me underneath? What are some of the undercurrents here? What are we hiding from ourselves that needs to be exposed, that needs to be open for inspection and looked at? Could we take a fearless inventory and look and ask God to help us see our blind spots this year? Realize this vital truth. Every one of us are born blind. So let's seek God's perspective and his insight this year and strive to develop the mind and the vision and the perspective of Jesus. So let's examine ourselves in order to see if we have, and we do have, some blind spots.